Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to full. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
.500 home, standing now at a record of 40 wins, 43 losses. My name is Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Terry Cushman Jr., and we are the Bastards of Boston. If you want more, you can go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles posted just about every day. Now, this was an ugly one. I was out to dinner, so I fortunately was able to just go along with the game day app on my phone for the first half. When I got home, it was pretty much decided. I think I got home right when Guerrero started pitching. So, I mean, I really got to witness a treat, didn't I? What stands out to you here? I mean, where do you even want to begin?
You know, we held out to see what Cora's comments were going to be. So I had about, 15 minutes of Nesson post-game with TC, Papelbon, and Lenny DiNardo. And they were talking about the pitching. You know, we had 8 walks, which is terrible. 10 strikeouts at least tonight from the offense. Bayo only struck out 1 despite getting the quality start. But to me, I mean, you can bash the pitching all you want, but if you're not going to put up runs, you're not going to win games. Like, for the foreseeable future, I'm putting it on the offense. And, you know, Giolito can go out tomorrow and put up a 5 spot. Eventually, this offense is going to get heavy to try to carry. And I every day we look at that, we look at the lineup card when it comes out, and we're like, oh, God. I mean, the bottom of it today had Wong, Sogard, and someone else that was, in Hamilton, who probably, I'm not even going to pull it up just yet, but probably has a OPS plus of 68.
That sounds about right. It might even be generous, and that's despite 2 walks tonight. You know, it's still just pitiful.
Yeah. So, you know, you and Charlie 1 week ago tonight podcasted the last win that got put on the board. That was you guys covering that game, and it's every show since. I've been on, it's been a busy week for me on the podcast, but yeah, all losses this week.
It's been brutal. It's been brutal. It's disgusting. I mean, obviously, with Marcelo Meyer unfortunately hitting the bereavement list, missing a couple of games, it really goes to show, again, just the lack of depth, which is what we've been talking about. You lose a guy like Bregman, you lose a guy like Abreu, and then you send a guy like Devers away. What do you have, really? You have a guy like Trevor Story, who I think we're all rooting for. He's shown little flashes, little signs of resurgence, But should he be batting cleanup? Absolutely not. In the past 30 games, 405 slugging, a 267 on base. That's not a cleanup hitter. That's barely even really a serviceable number nine. It's not good. Past 15 games, gets a little worse, quite honestly. The last seven games, it gets way worse. Trevor Story is not a number four hitter. He's not a number five hitter. He's not a number six hitter. He is only really technically a hitter. That's all I can say. I love the dude as a person. I want him to succeed. Putting him in the four hole is setting him up to fail. But who else do you put there? Not Abraham Toro, who's batting second right now. And unfortunately, I hate to say I wasn't wrong. I was just early by being so out on him. Looking at his chase rate, looking at his walk rate or lack of walks entirely. And now it seems like that carriage has turned into a pumpkin. The last 15 games from Abraham Toro, a 176 average, a 236 on base, a 275 slugging. It's catching up with him. That's our number two hitter to replace Rafael Devers in the lineup. It's just unacceptable. And you're absolutely right. I don't care how bad the pitching staff is, which there's a lot we can talk about regarding that. But if you're not going to score runs, what are you even doing? Right now, I like our outfield. You know, Duran, Abreu, Rafaela, I like that. That's good. Anthony, Ref Snyder. Aside from the outfielders, when Bregman's injured and Myers on the bereavement list, who do we have? We have no one.
I mean, you've got a leadoff guy in Duran who's having a bad year, but he's the leadoff guy. And is he the best hitter in your lineup anyway?
No.
I mean, maybe Nerváez, I guess.
At this point, if I had to choose a 1-2-3, like just a 1-2-3-4 without even looking at the numbers to try to like construct the optimal way. I think the ones that stand out to me, it's Abreu / Ref Snyder. It's probably Narvaez, Rafaela, and either Meyer or Anthony. And Meyer and Anthony aren't even, you know, producing insanely. I have a lot of faith in them, but it's just a sad state of affairs right now.
Yeah, I guess what I was getting at with Duran is, I mean, he's a leadoff guy, and that's a role, okay? There's nobody else that fits anything else in the lineup. There is no 2-3 or 4-hole hitter. Like, there's nobody that can assume that role. So you've got one guy that fits a role, and then the lineup is just cloudy. And it's... you could draw them out of a hat. Maybe that's what they're doing. I don't know. But I just don't see how you're going to get anything cohesive. Eventually, this losing streak will end. You know, they'll just be stupid hot for one night and put up 6 or 7, and that's all it's going to be. But tonight with Bayo on the mound, it wasn't looking good. I mean, after 3 innings, he was low 60s pitching. It was looking like it might even drift up into the 70s, but he got a couple of fast outs and got out of it and actually settled in pretty good. But with this lineup that we were just trashing, a 3 spot, that's like almost an impossible mountain to climb. I mean, short of them having a reliever come out of the pen that just doesn't have it and us having a big inning, putting up 3 is just really hard.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, especially, and people in the comments are pointing this out, and they're absolutely right. You look at a guy like Jarren Duran, he's fast, sure. Look at his OBP this year, 307. That's not good. That's not leadoff good, certainly. You want that number to be as high as possible. A guy like Duran batting leadoff is like something straight from the 1970s. And even then, Earl Weaver knew not to do it. He knew putting a guy with high on base out there because that is what matters. Ultimately, you have your guys behind him, the best guys who are going to bring him home. So you put a guy who gets on base. Duran's career 322 on base, 307 this year. It doesn't cut it. I don't care how many bases he can steal. I don't care how many singles he can stretch into doubles. It's just not working. But nothing's really working at this point.
if, let's just say, Devers is still here, Bregman didn't get hurt, Casas didn't get hurt and is serviceable, and then let's just say the kids are off to a little bit better of a start, I think Duran's numbers are probably significantly higher. I think his lack of production is just, it's just part of the environment right now. Like, there's no energy on this team to feed off of. And I'm even wondering now, I mean, this was the 10th game in the post-Devers era. I wonder, you know, if they could go back and hear their comments from the day after the trade, if perhaps they look at it a little differently. I mean, how many of them said, oh, he's just one guy. He's just one guy on the 26, man. There's 26 people here we can win. And two of the three wins that they have in the post-Devers era were right away in that Seattle series. And yeah, we caught them at the right time, I think. They were kind of sputtering, and we put up a couple W's, but I don't know. I think the reality is starting to sink into the clubhouse. With Devers, well, he was in the two hole, but I don't know. It just looked, it made the top half, however you arranged it, short of putting Story in there, it just made it look more formidable. And now it's Duran, Toro, and I don't know who.
Yeah. Yeah, the opening day lineup, at least on paper, was solid. I think we all had a lot of faith in those guys, and you're right. If guys stay healthy, and let's say Casas does bounce back, and let's even say he has a down year. You know, he has like a career OPS of about 800. Let's say he has a total down year, it's 700, you know? I agree. I think that there's just more depth to the lineup, because at the end of the day, it is true that Devers was just one of 26. But Bregman was also one of 26. Casas was one of 26. And if you start to lose enough ones out of 26, you're not left with that big a number at all. We are rolling out David Hamilton, who is a shell of himself. He wasn't even that great a hitter last year, but he was fine. This year, he's nothing. I'm sorry. He's a terrible MLB player this year. You have guys like Sogard and Eaton stepping in to fill in gaps. You have a guy like Wong, who when Narvaez sits, and I'm not sure why Narvaez sat today. Do you know why?
I didn't get an answer on that either, but I mean, Wong has just continued to suck. The first two runs that got scored were in part because of stolen bases. One was Guerrero. I want to say the other one was Clement, but I'm not positive. So, I mean, Wong just continues to hurt us. Wong should only be pitching on Sundays, basically.
Yeah.
You know, that's the afternoon game after the night game, and that's it. Narvaez every other time, and you got Thursdays off. So I don't know why he wasn't in there.
Yeah. You know, it's unfortunate to say that the best thing that Wong has done for this team was probably when he spent that short stint on the IL at the early season, and it sort of forced us to give Narvaez the starting role. When Narvaez isn't there, backup catcher, which in theory, I mean, your backup catcher should not be a vital piece of your team. I mean, in 2018, we had a duo of Vasquez, who wasn't even that great that year, with Sandy Leon, who was a black hole at the plate. But it goes to show exactly what we're illustrating, that when enough one out of 26s are added together, suddenly you have three people who aren't hitting. Suddenly you have five people who aren't hitting, and it gets to just a place where it's untenable. When it comes to the concept of lineup protection, which I saw George mention, it's funny, chat's reading my mind tonight. When it comes to the concept of lineup protection, I can't stand that people tell me it's not a real thing. It's just a myth. Maybe to some extent you can say it's overemphasized, but at the end of the day, if you have a shallow lineup where guys aren't taking pitches, they're not having competitive at bats, they're not stretching out the pitcher's arm, right? They're not getting him tired. They're not getting on base, which might lead to him making mistakes. It's true that if a guy gives up a double, he's going to start pitching differently to the rest of the lineup. He's going to be scared, right? A lot of the times, getting base hits can lead to rallies. Not for this team, which has been a run in scoring position black hole really all year long, but it's true. You know, you add in just about any player to this team, as people have been saying all over Twitter, this offense wasn't even that electric with Devers. Without him, we just are limp and meaningless, and it's pathetic to see. I think Meyer coming back will be huge, obviously. I think that maybe when Campbell and Yoshida come back, whenever that is, they could be big parts. I don't know why Vaughn Grissom isn't getting a chance. It seems like he'd be better than Hamilton. I like Hamilton's speed. They say, oh, well, he's a vital elite speed guy off the bench. To me, that counts in the postseason more than anything. During the regular season, just give me a guy who can hit, because Hamilton is getting starts. If you're getting starts, you need to go out there and have four at-bats a game. And I know tonight he had two walks, but this year it's just been abysmal production. And the defense hasn't made up for it.
Yeah, and you mentioned Yoshida coming back. I mean, isn't he automatically going to be your first or second best guy?
Yeah.
Against righties anyway. I mean, you've got Ref Snyder and Romy that hit lefties very well, and we're not facing one until Sunday. Yoshida will probably face the bulk of all the righties, and it's just crazy that we're in a position right now to where we desperately need Yoshida, who months earlier we were so desperate to put in the witness protection program just to get him out of there. So he's supposed to be back before the All-Star break. Bregman was he hitting today? He made a significant step today in his recovery in terms of activity. I forget what that was. It might have been hitting. He'll be back right after, but you're 3-under right now. I don't see the losing streak necessarily ending this series. I don't know if it's going to end. Well, it probably will end against the Reds, but I don't know.
It's really sad. And, you know, we can talk a little bit about Bayo. I think it's fair to talk about him, because I'm going to be somewhat complimentary in the sense that he had an ugly game. You look at the box score and you see 8 hits and 3 walks and only 1 strikeout. And by the way, our entire pitching staff tonight combined for 2 strikeouts. We only struck out the Blue Jays twice. Disgusting. But you look at, you know, 8 hits, 3 walks, 1 strikeout. That could be a disaster class. And Bayo probably did get lucky. But 6 innings pitched, only 3 runs giving up. That is technically a quality start. And it's a winnable game for a team with a healthy offense. You have teams going out there, and I'm just glancing at the box scores right now across the MLB, and I see 5, 5, 5, 4, 6, 10. Teams put up runs typically, not ours necessarily, but others do. You go 6 innings, you go 3 runs. As ugly as that game was for Bayo, if that's his bad game, he did all right. You know what I mean? This loss isn't on him, certainly. Exactly like you said. Guerrero came out, looked ugly. Bernardino came out and confirmed our worst fears, which is that the month of May has probably broken him. And, you know, it's just sad to see, because we've been giving away pitchers for free. Not to say that Quinn Priester would have fixed this team. You look at a lot of his metrics, he's not striking anyone out. He's got average walks, decent ground ball rate. Quinn Priester's all right looking, 24 years old. He's doing all right for the Brewers. 10 starts, 4 more appearances in relief, 71 innings pitched, a 3.68 ERA. I wouldn't mind that in the organization right now. I know that we got a good return for him, but again, it's a return for the future. Meanwhile, though, you look at a guy like Sean Newcomb, who is doing pretty well as sort of a swingman, longman for us. he's going to the Athletics for cash considerations. The Boston Red Sox, by the way, and we all saw the evaluation, right, of the Red Sox sort of value as an organization, $6 billion or something like that. We sold Sean Newcomb for cash considerations. He has 8 appearances for the Oakland Athletics, 17.1 innings pitched, 2.6 ERA. I'm not saying that Sean Newcomb and Quinn Priester fix this team. Don't get me wrong. Not at all. Not in a million years. But with Bernardino being worked into the ground, with Weissert seemingly not too far behind him, with the bullpen getting used so and so much that it's getting tired, I certainly wouldn't mind if Sean Newcomb was still on the roster right now, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is we're getting these guys a lot, or at least in the last week or two, because you're just not having leads late in games. I mean, Whitlock and Chapman just haven't really pitched. They just haven't had the opportunities. So the bad pitchers are getting overloaded. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if Guerrero gets optioned and perhaps even Bernardino, just to get some warm bodies up here to pitch. And then we were so far behind. Nick Eaton pitched the ninth inning to kind of take that load off. And so I'm not overly pessimistic with the bullpen. I think if we start winning again, you know, it'll get more balanced. And as far as the pitching goes in general, I mean, the only guy in the rotation I'm really down on right now is Walker Buehler. And I noticed it must have been a couple games ago, the camera just kind of panned to the dugout and you could see him and Bailey sitting there just kind of joking around. Like, Buehler didn't seem like a guy that's under a lot of pressure. You know, I said after his last start, he's in Corey Kluber territory, and that's just one step away from being DFA'd. But as far as everyone else, though, I mean, I'm positive on Crochet. I'm still positive on Giolito, despite maybe a blip against the Giants. See, they got him late in the start with a couple of solo shots in what was otherwise a very good start. And you know, I guess with Dobbins out, that kind of hurts. But yeah, so it's not. I'm not too worried about the pitching, and you've got Kyle Harrison should be coming up. He had a bad line a day or two ago, but they're trying to incorporate, I guess, a sinker into his arsenal.
A sinker and or a cutter, I heard.
Yeah. It seems like the cutter has been the pitch that other teams have gone to. Like when we DFA'd Brazier and he went to the Dodgers, you know, we all celebrated and we laughed at them for taking him, and they gave him a cutter and he was like the best reliever in baseball for the last 3 months of the season. So it's clear that the Red Sox are trying to tinker with something there with Harrison. And then even Hicks tonight, I saw a tweet that he hit 100 miles an hour on the gun. So I think we do have reinforcements coming, but
Slayton as well.
And Slayton's getting close. Yeah. Yeah. So that's another arm. And with Bayo too, I mean, the lack of strikeouts, that just happens. I mean, if you go through his game logs in previous years, he'll strike out 4 or 5, which is about his average. And then he'll strike out 1 or none, but still have a decent start. I mean, this looks like it could be the best season of Bayo's career. And this is the 4th year so far. So he's not he's essentially a veteran now. So like, this is kind of the now or never year. You know, if you're going to be at least the middle of the rotation guy, you better establish that this year. And he's grinding, you know, he had those few starts where he wasn't efficient. And, you know, the pitch count got up there by the end of the 4th inning. And he had a few, 3 or 4 in a row where he didn't pitch 5 full. But I think he's trending the right way. And he's been a very good second half of the season pitcher. Basically, you know, his whole career so far, that's essentially what saved him. So he's kind of, you know, taken a quicker route to that this year. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. But to me, it's the offense. You know, we just talked about all this pitching help that we're getting, and we don't have any hitting help coming outside of maybe Yoshida. And so,
yeah. And I fear that by the time Yoshida comes back, I'm not sure what the timetable is on that, but by the time we get Yoshida back to DH with Ref Snyder, who, again, funnily enough, I mean, you listen to Breslow talking about the idea of flexibility at the DH spot. That's ridiculous to me. That's not what a DH does. A DH isn't there to be flexible. A DH isn't there to give guys a day off. A DH is there. I've been told not to curse, but you can imagine what, you know, a word I would add to this sentence. They're there to bleep and hit. That's what a designated hitter is for. You look at David Ortiz. You look at JD Martinez. You look at Kyle Schwarber. You look at guys who have DH'd. Well, Schwarber was a first baseman for us, but you look at these DH profile guys. They're complete liabilities in the field, and that's fine because they have the DH spot. It's the MLB. Now both leagues have it. You don't even need to worry about carrying someone, you know, for when you go to a National League park in the World Series or, you know, during interleague play. It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. The DH is not there to be a flexible role. The DH being, oh, well, we'll just put a second baseman there because, you know, he's the backup guy and we'll give him his days on there. That's what the Rays does. And you know what? Maybe it works for the Rays. We aren't a poverty team. We need to stop acting like it because you look at the results, they are poverty. We are below 500, I believe, overall in the Alex Cora era, or at least maybe not the Alex Cora era because he did sit out that 1 year. But since the World Series, it's just been bad. It's bad, 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 and it's getting worse, worse, worse. And I'm hoping that next year we can bounce back. But right now, the problem with this entire ship is the captain. If you don't have a crew that knows where they're going, it really doesn't matter what the ship is made of. It doesn't matter how fast the guys underneath the deck rowing the oars are going if you have a guy who's just leading them in wrong directions. I'm afraid that's what we're getting with Craig. I'm afraid that's what we're getting with John Henry. I'm afraid that that may be what we're getting with Bailey and Thatsy. It's just ugly right now. And you have physically gifted players who are not delivering. And I'm very fearful that this is going to turn us into a very Orioles-esque organization rather than a Rays-esque organization.
So as we look towards the deadline here, I'm just boldly going to say we're going to be sellers.
I don't see this team producing offensively. I really don't.
Right. Eventually, they're not going to be able to, like Breslow goes on WEI every Thursday, and he's not going to say, oh, I expect to make big moves at the deadline. I mean, as soon as next Thursday, that could be just completely, you know, they could do a 180, and there's no way you can tell us with a straight face you're going to be buyers. If you're going to be buyers, it has to be in the form of controllable guys that are essentially pieces for 26, 27, 28. That's where the buying would have to be. And I don't know. I mean, what is Breslow good at?
At this point, I would say he's established. The one thing I will say about Craig that we know for sure is he is very, very good at giving away top-end talent. He's great at that. You know, you look at Sale, you look at Devers. I mean, he has a knack for it, man. I don't think I could do it any better. That's about it, I would say. At least Heim Bloom, you can look at his draft record. You know, the kids are here. Other guys he drafted, like, I forget his name. Is it Mikey Romero was the other shortstop that we drafted? I think he's having sort of a resurgence here in AA, sort of raising his value. At least Bloom had that. Breslow right now, I mean, he did the crochet trade, but like you've pointed out many times in the past, my grandma could have gotten that done. Anyone with a brain would have traded for Garrett Crochet. And look at Chase Meidroth's production right now and tell me that you wouldn't rather have him than David Hamilton. Tell me you wouldn't rather have Kyle Teal than Connor Wong. And maybe in a couple of years, we'll look at a guy like Montgomery or I forget who else. Did we give up Wilkelman in that trade, I think?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Wilkelman Gonzalez.
So maybe in a few years, we'll say, man, I really wish we had those guys too. The Crochet trade was good in the sense that you got an ace, but it was a desperate move because he got outbid on Max Fried, plain and simple.
You know, I don't, at the time I was annoyed with the Max Fried thing because no moves had happened, but I'm okay with it because I'm convinced he's going to have Tommy John and that's going to be a bad contract, you know? And so I'm fine that, you know, we ended up with Crochet and, you know, I wanted Bueller. I'm just going to have to take the L on that most likely, but I essentially was happy with how the winter played out as far as pitching. Do you know what Kyle Teal's numbers are right now?
They're not super flashy. I know. I think the on bases are right.
Yeah. It's the, he's not doing that bad. Actually. He's hitting 282 with a 408 on base, an OPS plus of 120. So that's fine. That's fine.
And Meidroth right now is honestly one of the better sort of second basemen in the league right now, especially among rookies.
Yeah. No power, but you know, a nice, he probably looks like he could be a one or two hole hitter.
Yeah, if I just pull up my draft right now, he walks a lot too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so a 349 on base right now, sure would love that, with elite range, by the way, as well. So, I don't know, it's just frustrating. It's really frustrating.
Yeah, I think we could be on the verge of an interesting July in terms of what happens with this front office. Because Sam Kennedy, as I mentioned last night, he's not talking anymore. He came out and it was mandatory to talk to the media about the Devers thing, but he knows he's radioactive. He knows there's nothing he can do to change a narrative or to steer a narrative. He's cooked, and Breslow's getting there as well. And so I don't know which way it's going to go, but I think a major move is going to happen, and you know, we'll see. But this roster needs to be cleaned up. It needs to be streamlined. You need to trade some of your lefties, and I'm not talking Meyer or Anthony, but your other lefties. You need to streamline it. I know the password could be up next year, so perhaps that's a you know, that's a key righty bat to help get you balanced. I'm still a Rafaela guy.
Oh yeah.
You know, so but at the same time, is he ever going to be a 4 or 5 hole hitter? No, I don't think so. But yeah, I think he definitely has a place in the lineup, but.
Oh yeah. I mean, the defense alone, really, from a guy like Rafaela, the defense, the speed, and the fact that I feel like his approach this year has taken a big step forward than last year. He's a guy I'm psyched to have on this team for a long time. Like you mentioned, the password is tearing up AAA right now. I do think we have interesting players and interesting pieces and perhaps an interesting future. But the right now is really frightening, specifically because will that interesting future be compromised by incompetent leadership? That's kind of what you need to ask yourself. And that's a real possibility right now because, unfortunately, Breslow is probably secure in his job solely because of how undesirable it is. No one wanted it last year, or excuse me, 2 years ago. No one really wants it right now, I imagine. I think the situation's only gotten worse in terms of that.
Yeah, I'm probably the most optimistic guy on the crew that he may not be here next year. And I think John Henry, Sam Kennedy, I think they all know why nobody wanted the job at this point. And I think they're going to spend the next several weeks accepting that a lot of the people in the front office are going to have to be let go, you know, and the next executive is going to have, you know, he's going to build his own front office with his guys. He's going to pick his own manager. I don't think Alex Cora is going to, this would be the fourth executive that Alex Cora has managed this Red Sox under if a new one comes in. So I think they're going to be able to pick his manager. I've spoke about it this week a couple of times. I published an article on bastardsofboston.com. You can trade Alex Cora. You can, some team will take him, and you know, that's how you get out of the money as far as that goes. I don't know if Breslow's contracts or, you know, the GM's contracts are fully guaranteed. I don't think they have union protection, so that makes me think that they're not guaranteed, but I'm not positive. And, you know, and I think somebody will come in and will have a competent front office. But Breslow, his personality is just too toxic. He's not likable. I said last night, too, what other teams out there want to help the Boston Red Sox with a trade? Who wants to send nice people? I think 29 other front offices out there are loving the fact that Fenway is burning right now, and they're just content to let it burn. And Breslow is just that smug guy on the other end of the phone who's only going to do it if it's the perfect deal for him. And I don't think anyone cares. He's a guy that doesn't have any leverage at all in any type of deal.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, it's no secret that since 2004, the Red Sox have had many years absolutely terrorizing this league. We have ended many teams' playoff aspirations. We have ended many teams' rebuilds and failures. We have absolutely shellacked a lot of teams. And so I agree. I mean, it's sort of like the idea that when your enemy is at his weakest, why would you help him, right? The Red Sox have proven time and time again over the last 20 years that they can be dangerous. They can be really good. They can go out there and find great players and assemble great teams and win the World Series. They've done it four times. But right now, I agree with you. It's gotten to the point where no one would want to throw us a lifeboat, because if they do, or a life vest rather, if they do, then it's very possible we meet them in October and no one wants that. Maybe we meet them next year. No one wants that. It's just tough. It's really, really tough. And, you know, I want to say one thing about Breslow, about the idea that it's very possible, it's and probably fairly rare, that words alone get a GM fired, or anyone fired, really, unless they're truly offensive. Every now and again, an executive or a coach will say something incredibly stupid, and it will sort of be immortalized. Back in 2018, Brian Cashman had the infamous "do damage" comment, which he immediately was forced to eat with the four-game sweep in Fenway. And that pretty much ended up becoming the Red Sox's rallying cry. Do damage. They wore it on their shirts. They sold merchandise with it. That was the 2018 Red Sox taking Brian Cashman's words and weaponizing them against the Yankees and against everyone else. I think this year, and probably for the rest of his career, is going to be absolutely haunted by the idea of we're going to win more games without Devers than we would with him. You know, to paraphrase, it's just disgusting. It really is. It's arrogant, but I almost think it's stupid. I think it's stupid more than anything. And I think that's the scariest thing, because at least when it comes to arrogance, you know, when it comes to pride, you can sort of diagnose where that will lead. When it comes to stupidity, it's unpredictable. You know how, you know, sometimes your elderly family members, they'll make bad spending decisions and you feel like you need to get, I think it's called like a conservatorship or something like that. Yeah. That's what we needed for Breslow. We need someone to step in and say, we are not allowing you. We are not allowing you to trade Devers. You're clearly not in your right frame of mind. Go home, go all this. But obviously, I mean, that whole situation was such a mess. It's ridiculous. And I don't know if we end up selling and if we end up finishing below 500 and missing the playoffs, which we probably will. I don't know how you keep Breslow around, because Henry is not stupid. I think Henry is arrogant and has a right to be, as many billionaires do. But how do you allow a guy to say what he said and do what he did and then keep his job? How does that reflect on you if you're John Henry?
Yeah, and Jeff Passan is tweeting it, you know, word for word. And I've said this throughout the week. He was a science project, and it just didn't work. It just, you know, and I forgot what I was going to say, but I was just thinking tonight, because apparently we've got the lowest OPS in Major League Baseball since the Devers trade. It's like 5-something. We're ranked literally 30th. The Colorado Rockies are ahead of us in that category. And I was thinking to myself, you know, because I've been battling fans all week. I shouldn't say a bunch, but, you know, 3 or 4 of them have come at me and said, we're only like a game and a half out of the wild card. And I'm like, these guys are so dumb. These guys that troll us on social media are so dumb. Breslow was so toxic, alienated himself from the entire front office. Nobody's friends with him anymore. He's so toxic that he talked the dumbest faction of Red Sox fans into believing that Devers was the toxic one and that we would win more games without him. That trade's going to be worse than the Mookie trade. It's going to be way more damning. You know, Devers and Mookie impacted the team in far different ways. You know, Devers was the guy you trusted in the big moment. Mookie was flashy. Mookie could destroy the Orioles on a Tuesday night in June like nobody else. But Devers was the guy to get it done. He was the guy who had hit FU home runs off of Gerrit Cole because he felt like it, you know.
And we knew he was going to be that guy as soon as he hit that Chapman fastball. You know, we knew it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, does Campbell, Meyer, or Anthony look like they're prepared for 104 and then to crush it over that center field? That's what Devers was. That's what you had. And it's gone because Breslow was butthurt. Like they literally, it's like, this is the perfect analogy. Okay. You have a Lamborghini. And then you've got a guy like Breslow who's never driven one. Let's say he can't afford one. Maybe he can. I don't know. I don't know how much money he made in his career and what he makes now. But he just wants to take it for a spin. And you know he probably shouldn't take it for a spin. And he takes it down the road and he just totally demolishes it. That's what happened with Devers. That's what happened when he took Rafi Devers for a spin. He demolished it. And you know, I'll admit Devers didn't handle it the right way, but it was totally avoidable from day one. And Breslow had the arrogance that he thought he was going to get his way. And
I would just like to add in, because I do see someone in the comments saying it. Believe me, I'm no Cora apologist. I'm absolutely no Cora apologist. We've talked pretty extensively, I think, about Cora's impact and whatnot on the show and behind the scenes too. We are quite loud, you know. It's frustrating. It's frustrating. And I think that having the players and the coaches and the front office all on almost completely different pages, I mean, not even almost, really completely different pages, it really seems to be a very recurring problem over the past many years in the Red Sox history. And until you get everyone on the same page, I think that the dysfunction is just going to continue. I agree with you that the idea of it's funny because I think that the Devers return will no doubt be better than the Mookie return. I mean, that's obviously the power of hindsight can help us with that, because what did we get for the Mookie return? Not a lot. But when you look at Devers' contract, not even just the style of player he was, but the circumstances around Devers, he was locked here for a long time. He would have been a third baseman, a below average one, perhaps, or even a bad one. But I feel like Devers probably could have been persuaded to move to first base if they handled it better, and they just didn't. I think at the very least, he could have been behind both Bregman or someone else and Casas as just a depth piece, DH, who's ready to come off the bench. The whole idea of put your glove away, the whole idea of, oh, no, that's just media rumors that we're going for Arenado or Bregman. It's ridiculous. And I agree with you that Devers didn't handle it the right way. He acted childish. He acted immature. I don't appreciate it. But at the same time, I mean, he has a right to be angry. I think anyone else would in his situation. And it sucks. It really sucks.
Yeah, he should have been the first baseman right away. You know, that's what should have happened. I mean, you're essentially trying to give Casas to the Mariners for free if they take Yoshida. That's how much they valued Tristan Casas. So make Casas your DH.
Yeah.
And that, and Devers could have played first, and you could have framed it as, well, look at Vladdy. I mean, he went from third to first. It'll be fine. And, you know, it came out maybe a week or so after the Devers trade that he was in fact willing to go to first if they committed to him beyond this season. Like, I call that giving Breslow an out.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you've been a complete moron this whole season. You've botched everything about what I'm doing. I'm giving you this out. And that wasn't even good enough for Breslow.
And even then, you know, the idea of Bregman coming here just as a rental, like, I understand you want to upgrade your defense, but it's very possible Bregman comes here, he plays here for a year, he opts out, he takes an 8-year contract somewhere else. So to lose your third baseman, even if he's not a good third baseman defensively, to lose that guy for what could have been a rental. And now look at the leverage, as we've mentioned, as many people have mentioned, we have no leverage in this Bregman discussion. The only thing in our favor is, oh, well, he's coming off a bad injury. It's possible, you know, we'll see what the rest of his season looks like. Maybe we can get an extension done, but we're forced to do that now because what other option do we have? Abraham Toro, Nick Sogard? Absolutely not. Apparently, certainly not Vaughn Grissom. I don't know where he is, but it's sad. It really is. And it's frustrating. And I saw someone else, and this is a common sentiment I've been seeing among Red Sox fans, saying that I'm not even angry right now with the losses. I'm just disappointed. You know, that's sort of where I'm at right now. I have no rage inside me. This team doesn't have the power to ruin my night because I go into the games at this point and I just go, yeah, that's about what I expected from this lineup. Yeah, that's about what this team has proven to me that it does. You know, it's and that's not what the Red Sox should be. You know, it's just not. And it's a shame. I mean, I how many times have I said it's a shame this episode? It's ridiculous.
It has to be about the kids going forward and getting them developed and all that. But I'll say this about Bregman. I don't want an extension. I want them to handle this exactly how they handled the JD Martinez opt-outs, where he bluffed his ass off and then never did opt out. And I know Bregman's a little different because he's a plus defender. But if he opts out, let him. And because I guarantee you what's going to happen. He's going to be sitting there the third week of January. There's probably going to be a couple of teams interested. And I think the Red Sox can get back into it, have a little bit of leverage, and sign him to a deal that they're comfortable with. And if we get our way, it's not going to be Breslow handling that. So that's what I would do. And honestly, I'm open-minded. If you don't get him, I mean, you're going to have to probably go the 2013 route, where you're going to need a few veterans that are going to be signed to 2 or 3 year deals. You know, your Rhys Hoskins type guys, he's, I think, going to opt out. He has a mutual option, and they haven't, no player or team has agreed on a mutual option since 2018.
Wow.
Yeah. So those aren't really a thing, even though, yeah, the player either has a very good year, like he was last I checked, and he's just going to want to go to free agency. So I don't know. Go get a few of them, but even that's only going to make sense if you develop the kids. If Anthony and Meyer at least have a good second half, you're going to feel pretty good going into the winter. If they're sitting automatically, like this Sunday, you're going to have Romy most likely. Well, you will, because Meyer won't even be back yet. But you're going to have your lefty platoons in there. And I shouldn't say lefty platoons. Your Ref Snyders and Romies that,
yeah, your lefty platoons. I think that's fair.
Okay, the guys lefty that come assassins, in.
And, I like to say, yeah, you know?
Okay, because that's the better great
this year. You know, at least.
Yeah. So, yeah. So anyway, that's what needs to happen. I can't sit here and say that we're going to be able to retool next year and basically do what we did last winter. When you take Devers out of the equation, that's a massive that's a massive piece that you desperately need. So I don't know how you do it, but let's just get into tomorrow. So we got Giolito Bassett's a righty, having a very good year, I think, has decent numbers against us. I mean, do we have any reason to believe that the streak's going to end tomorrow?
Simply the law of probability. The way I look at these games, these are two tough games that a lot's going to have to go right for us to beat the Blue Jays. I would like to think, oh, well, certainly we're not going to go on a 9-game win streak, lose streak, which would be the longest loss streak, of course, tenure here in Boston. But I've got no reason now.
Yeah, I don't think we're gonna win either. And the one thing I kept meaning to touch on throughout the show is this Blue Jays team looks fun.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't know a ton about Ernie Clement, but he's having a very good year. You know, he's not a power guy, but he's hitting .309 with a .350 on base. That Addison Barger guy, I mean, he had one big hit late, but I mean, just glancing at the metrics, I mean, he's been a very serviceable guy for them, hitting .260 with a .324 on base. He's hit 8 dingers. They don't really have any base stealers outside of, ironically, George Springer, who's got 9. He's tied with Andrés Giménez, who I think they got from the Guardians over the winter. But this is a team that's starting to look interesting. And we talk about the window closing. I don't know. Maybe it's a longer window than we think, because they're kind of retooling on the fly. I wasn't familiar with him until literally tonight, but that Jonathan Class A guy, I mean, his numbers don't look super great right now. He's hitting .208. He does walk a lot, though. I mean, his on base is almost 80 points above his batting average, but I don't know. It's a very interesting team. Even George Springer, I thought that contract was going to age like milk, but he's been very serviceable. He's had his injuries. I mean, he plays probably 120 games a year, but I
mean, Springer's been an albatross the past couple of years, but this year, I mean, he's hitting the ball better than almost everyone else. I mean, he's unbelievable this year, not just the surface level, but the metrics too.
Yeah. So what I was getting at is, I mean, we're catching them at kind of the wrong time. Giolito, he has started to finally pitch better at Fenway, but I can't sit here and say that it's going to end tomorrow. The bleeding will stop, and I think we're going to take the L, and I think Walker Buehler is an automatic L against a lineup like this.
Buehler versus Lauer. That's going to be Lauer kind of a swing man this year, you know, six relief appearances, five starts, pretty good surface numbers, you know, pitching pretty decently under the hood too. So it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge. I would fully expect us to see Giolito have a nice game. We might even see a Buehler bounce back, and yet we would still probably lose both of those. So yeah, I'm going to be a pessimist here, and maybe you could just call it a realist and say we're probably getting swept. Let's go for 9 losses.
If the lefty was tomorrow against Giolito, we would have a shot. Yeah, then I say closer to 50-50. But since the lefty is against Buehler, I don't like it. And then yeah. Francona is going to laugh his ass off the whole time in that series. How pathetic we are. And
yep.
So, all right. Well, we'll wrap on that. We'll be back on, Sunday. That's usually a Charlie show. So we'll see what did happen for the remainder of this series.
Yeah. Everyone, good luck. Stay safe. Try to stay happy. I know there's not a lot of reasons from Boston to give you that right now. I mean, if you're from Boston, maybe you can look forward to the Patriots season. That's sort of where I'm at right now. I've been Nick, joined by Terry. We've been the Bastards of Boston, and we hope you have a great rest of your day.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.